and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Joan Matthews-Larson, and we're going to talk about her book, Depression Free Naturally. And this book is a little old. I mean, it's copyright back in 1999, but when I read it today and yesterday, I was like, oh my God, this is one of the best books that I've ever read, because it's still very current. So she was out there when everything first began in alternative medicine and mood disorders and addiction, I might add. So let's welcome Dr. Larson, and thank you so much for taking the time to come on. This is a fabulous book.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It really is. It's like an all-encompassing 300-page book that people can understand. It's great. So before we get started,
I do think that the lay person can understand it very well. And I mean, I've had enough time to hear from people to realize that it's said in words that they can then put into action. It isn't like a medical text.
That's exactly right. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about you, where people can find you, and how they can get this book.
All right. Well, my life really changed radically in 1970, which seems like a long time ago. But at that point, my husband died of a massive heart attack. He was 40 years old then. And it really disrupted our lives. I had three children. My middle child took it harder, I think, than everyone. And I was slow to see that he had turned to alcohol and marijuana. He was in junior high. He was just a kid. And it took me maybe a year and a half before I sought help and of course, I thought the experts knew what they were doing. I put him in a treatment center that was inpatient in a hospital for a month. And I just knew that I could pick him up and he would be fine at that point. So, but unfortunately, the depression in him was terrible. And treatment consists, as it still does, of reviewing all the faults and mistakes of their lives. And he really became profoundly depressed. When he came home shortly after, he took his life. He committed suicide. So that was second death for me. And at that point, something odd happened in that it wasn't that I wasn't grieving, but another part of me seemed to rise from the ashes. And I just demanded of myself that I understand why I was taking him to the cemetery. So I began to read everything that I could find on alcoholism and on the kinds of 12-step thinking that had gone into the programs, and I was shocked at what I read. In fact, one thing that really unhinged me was that one out of five. Let me get that straight, because it's been a while since I've even let myself think about this study. But the study was in a psychological journal and involved quite a few people. And it showed that of those that go to treatment, one out of four commit suicide, usually before the end of the first treatment, the first year. And so with that, I realized that whatever was going on had really nothing to do with healing. And then I began to look at government studies and studies by, people who weren't connected with a treatment center but did studies professionally. And none of them showed any amount of success. people had maybe a 10% to 20% chance of not going back to using by the end of the first year, and three more years, it was over 95% that had relapsed and were using. And just as significant was that almost everybody was depressed or anxious. And, of course, talk didn't address any of that. So I began to think that what I had been interested in for a long time, which was orthomolecular medicine. Now, this was a group of psychiatrists that really didn't value using drugs. They felt that the real chemicals that run the brain were much more able to do the job. It was simply a matter of matching what was needed to the person's symptoms. And they also invented, maybe that's the wrong word, a lot of lab tests that would show underlying causes for depression and anxiety and unstable moods. So that began to make very good sense to me, that you would actually have a scientific approach so that you could intervene and shut down those cravings. Bill W., founder of AA, had a significant friendship with Abram Hoffer, who was the founder of orthomolecular medicine, and his three communications to AA physicians talked a lot about the hypoglycemia that's always a part of alcoholism, and other key clues that really related to biochemical repair, not just therapy. So at that point, I was very interested in it. I had a degree It's like behavioral health. But what I wanted was a nutritional degree, and I eventually did wind up with a PhD in human nutrition. But I went to work then as a counselor first, and I could see that all the research that I'd been reading was certainly not interesting to anyone else. They were still gathering people in groups to talk to them, and the recovery rates were still minimal. But actually, as I thought about what Dr. Linus Pauling had said about this whole field and about nutrition in psychiatry as well, when he coined the word orthomolecular, he said the human mind can't operate in a vacuum. I mean, we're talking to this human mind, okay? It's totally dependent on the brain and that molecular function of the brain to create our emotional health. And a sane and stable brain is possible, or a sane and stable mind, I mean, is possible only when an organically healthy brain is functioning. So it became really a challenge to be able to see if replacing that wipeout of brain chemicals, and sometimes, you know, it isn't just from alcohol, sometimes genetically, if you look on either side, you see a person here or there who is bipolar or even schizophrenic or heavy drinker, or so you can imagine how these people came to have brains that needed some reinforcing with the real chemicals that they didn't have enough of. So after a couple of 4 years it was that I worked at Chrysalis, which was a women's center. We had a government grant, and we were doing treatment. I decided it was time to find out if all that I had read worked or not. So I founded Health Recovery Center really on a shoestring, because I was trying to raise my children and make it in the world with very little. But from the very beginning, I'll never forget that first year, treating the hypoglycemia seemed to stop the cravings. And I was so surprised. I thought that it would have some effect, but really, it had a huge effect. Now, in the 80s, the drugs, the psychoactive drugs, hadn't been a factor, usually. In treatment, they weren't so foolish as to dish out more drugs to people who had come to get off drugs in the 80s. So when I look back, it was faster that people got better because we did a lot of labs, the kinds of the types of labs that we did were all orthomolecular type research that they had done, and so we were able to do things that, well, exactly what they said would happen usually did happen. And you know, there was I don't know if he's still alive, a director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Richard Nakamura, who said this: we've had a revolution in our understanding of the brain. The brain is constantly rebuilding itself throughout life. We used to think what we got dealt was it. But it isn't. But if the brain is constantly rebuilding itself throughout life, what is it using to do this? Toxic drugs, as psychiatry would let you think? Or the real natural chemicals from the blueprint of life? So it becomes more and more a strong conviction of mine. It's been 30 years, and we have branched out to treat more than addiction, because the labs that show us why an alcoholic is depressed or has bipolar or is even schizophrenic also tell us why people who haven't gone to alcohol or street drugs for comfort but have the same underlying causes as we were treating in the addicts, it's the same solution. So gradually in that book, Depression Free Naturally is really the result of us turning to mental health repair as well as addiction. And now we've gone into, I don't know if you can call it going into, but there's so many people that are food addicted, and they also have all over the country the kinds of programs that say, you know, eat one of each from each food group, and we'll talk to you about changing your thinking. When indeed the underlying cause across the board for that is that they're full of cerebral allergies that hijack their brains, and they binge. Or if they're anorexic, they have no zinc. Without zinc, we can't smell or taste. So who needs to eat? They aren't interested in eating. So we've, you know, following the same road, that there are biochemical explanations for emotional, what seems like emotional, I don't know what to call them, problems that ordinarily you would either get good advice from a psychologist or you would get toxic drugs from a psychiatrist. That is, neither one is going to lead to a fast or even sometimes ever lead to any resolve.
So where do people find your book and find you?
Well, my book has now gone into many languages. I mean, Japanese and Russian and Finnish and French. They can reach me at Health Recovery Center in Minneapolis. I can give you the number and our web also our web page. The number here is 800-554-9155. And anyone out of the country can call 612-827-7800. And if you want to look us up on the web. Pardon?
Do you do any phone consultations?
We do very seldom. It's because it's, well, of course, before a person comes, we do, we talk over as much as we can what the problem is, where they've been, the whole condition, but we don't attempt by phone to treat it because it's more involved than that. I mean, you want to see the labs, you want to see the person. There's so much to be learned by starting all the way back to babyhood. You know, did you use a lot of antibiotics because you had earaches, things like that? In fact, when I say that, I always think to mention that any mother now that's seeing earaches in her child, that is allergy to dairy, to milk. That's what's causing all that clogging up in the ears. So you don't need to put, you know, drugs into them. Just take them off of dairy.
Okay.
At any rate.
Before we get started into how you treat things, I would like for you to talk about labs a little bit. I don't want to forget to cover this.
You'd like me to talk about what?
Labs. What are the labs that people can look to for? What are the different disorders, and what labs can they go to get, like for bipolar?
Well, let me tell you instead something that relates to that. A person suffering from depression, for example, we would want to see from what causes of depression might relate to them. So we would look at essential fatty acid deficiencies and neurotransmitter depletion and low hormone levels, thyroid, including Hashimoto's. Low thyroid will cause just a black depression in people. Hypoglycemia, certainly it causes depression. Brain allergies, cerebral sensitivities, airborne chemicals, for instance, the ethanols that house painters breathe in all day long as they paint. They've got a low level of intoxication going before they can finally head for the bar. And so there's a lot of both. The brain is suffering a lot of times from chemicals as well as foods that it just can't handle. And the systematic buildup of fungal molds like candida, yeast, fungi will overrun the brain if it goes on long enough. We look at all the vitamin and mineral deficiencies. We look at the elevated histamine that will cause a lack of methylation in the brain. The brain races along then, needs methionine to bring it back. Heavy metals, in the last couple of years, we've been doing challenges for heavy metals, and I have to tell you that almost everybody we treat has quite elevated levels of heavy metals, like mercury and lead, and sometimes cadmium or copper. So these are things that if you leave them in your brain, there's no way that you're going to feel normal. And also the wipeout that has come from either the street drugs or the prescription drugs that they've taken will cause depression. So these are all things that fall under information collecting. Then we use labs all over the country. We don't use just one lab. So
what kind of lab?
Depending on what we're looking for, it would be a specific lab. In the book, I mention, I think most of the labs that are in the book we are still using.
You brought up fungal infections. I can't think of a single person that I know that doesn't have candida going on. How do you treat that?
Well, for years we tried to treat it, you know, benignly and not with toxic drugs, but we finally got around to that. Not getting the candida cleared from the brain was the result of not having a strong enough drug that would do that. So now we use Diflucan, and that will take it out of the intestinal tract and the brain.
But I guess
sometimes people are so overrun with it that they need to do two rounds. It's a 15-day affair to do it once, and typically that should be enough, although people we see still have some signs.
So does that kill off the good bacteria too?
Does it kill off the good bacteria? No, I don't know that it does kill off the good bacteria. Although, as part of their daily list of what they take, almost everybody is taking a lot of enzymes and probiotics and so forth. Long after, usually for life, because if it doesn't matter what vitamins and minerals you take, if you don't have the enzymes to do the actual action of turning them on to what they're supposed to be able to do, how they function. You get nothing without enzymes.
So the thing I want to start with is fat. And you talk about prostaglandin E, and I've never had anybody talk about that. What can you tell us about that? I want to learn about that.
Prostaglandin E1, yeah. It seems to hit some nationalities more than others, but we don't need to go into that. We make what is it? There's two kinds of essential fatty acids. That's omega-3 and 6. And the omega-6 chain, some people, in fact, many that we've treated, do not successfully go down that chain, changing and changing until it's finally ready to go over into the brain and make prostaglandin E1. And so they suffer all their lives from depression because they can't load enough of prostaglandin E1 to be, that's a real feel-good metabolite in the brain. So what we do then is go back to where it breaks down, gamma linolenic acid, and take a capsule of that with each meal. And today, with what we use, it takes about a week. When we started out in the 80s, it took like 3 weeks. And we had people that they'd been depressed all their lives. They didn't smile at us. They didn't even look at us. And suddenly, it would lift. When it finally loaded enough, it would simply vanish. That depression was gone.
So how do you increase that? Is there a supplement prostaglandin, or do you use the omega-3s?
No, omega-3 won't do it. What do we use? We use, it's gamma linolenic acid, GLA, and it's in a few different things. The important thing is that you take it in, because I can remember in the 90s, a source, a cheaper source turned up, and I was right on top of that because they were going to save money for our clients and seemed to even provide more than the source we were using. And what happened was, for a few years, it didn't seem to be. I don't know. I knew something was wrong. Then Dr. Horobin, who was the researcher that had developed all this knowledge around this, died. And there was quite a write-up in the Townsend Letter for Doctors about him. And one doctor said he wanted to reiterate that Dr. Horobin had said you can't use anything else, you have to use, and I'm trying to think what the heck it is we use. I'll look it up while we talk and I'll find it. Because of the other, or nothing else really, worked in the same way. And I was really amazed that we went back, of course, immediately, and I again could see that things were much better, that people were pulling out, and that had stopped. It's just that there's so many things that we're doing and things that they're taking that I didn't really get it, that our switch to a different form had done us some harm. So it's funny.
One of the things that I see in your book on this same topic is hyperactive children seem to benefit from prostaglandin.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of research on that.
Steve, please.
Well, I don't know. I think it's the same as prostaglandin E1. In fact, I can tell you something even more sensational than that he did, Dr. Horobin, a study. This was with animals, but you'll soon understand the significance of this, where he gave them alcohol every day, and one group of animals getting the alcohol, they also got adequate amounts of the GLA to make prostaglandin E1. When the litters were born, the ones that just were drinking the alcohol were all either dead or terribly deformed. In other words, we're talking about what's happening in fetal alcohol syndrome. The other litters that had the protection of the GLA, some were completely perfect, and others had slight damage, but nothing could even compare with what was going on with straight alcohol. And he said it was because the prostaglandin E1 guarded both the liver and the brain against toxins. So since then, I have made it my life's work, but it's not too successful. Whenever I talk to a group, for instance, I talked to 75 different tribe representatives down in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a few years ago, and begged them to do that study, because what they would see after a year or two, that there was no fetal alcohol syndrome in their people, even though the mothers-to-be were drinking the whole 9 months. And it isn't an expensive thing to do either. It's just that nobody cares about them, I guess, because it just isn't being done. So
how would you treat a hyperactive child? Because when I go to my son's school, I have a 12-year-old. It's not one or two. It's almost every child has the problem.
And well, I think there's a number of things going on. I certainly would give them the gamma linolenic acid. I would also carefully look at what they're eating, because I'm trying to think of the doctor's name. He used to be famous. He started out with that whole premise of you treat hyperactivity by taking away certain foods that they don't handle right, including sugar. I mean, they can certainly start with sugar, but also the grains, dairy. When we test these people, we're doing delayed reactions to these foods. People who get an immediate reaction don't need a lab test. They see it Okay, and those aren't the kind of reactions we're worried about. They're probably never going to go near that food again if they get an immediate reaction that scares them. But it's the delayed reactions that cause all kinds of changes in the brain. In fact, in any organ or system in the body from allergies. But many times a hyperbrain results. So, and if you look at what kids are eating, it's no mystery why their brains are not stable.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, over the years, for 30-plus years, we have done a 6-hour glucose test. We finally got to 5 hours. And I can tell you that almost everybody, thousands of people that we test, are hypoglycemic. And yet, you know, that's all they want to eat is sugar and high carbohydrate. They can't do that.
I have to tell you this little story that happened the other day. I live in an area where we grow a tremendous amount of food for our state, and I guess probably for our country, because it's a farming community. And there is a little farm down the road that I stopped at where you can pick your own blackberries and pick your own apples. And I pull up in the parking lot right in front of where the apple trees are, and there was a huge sign that said, "Poison, danger, do not enter this area, pesticides used." And I couldn't believe it, because these very same apples are the ones that they pick off these trees and then take them inside and sell them in their market.
Right, but you know those apples are sprayed from the time they are just a bud on a tree. They just reek of toxins. And that isn't true just for apples. This country doesn't have any regard for its food supply.
They had a danger sign on their fruit. I couldn't believe it.
Well, good for them. If it was, because organic fruit, you don't need a danger sign, and there's nothing to be afraid of.
But was it evening primrose oil that you were using?
It is. That's what it is. Evening primrose oil. That's what you use. One capsule each meal.
But
just as important is that if you have a child that is loading in sugar and junk food, I mean, you need to pray for a miracle if you think hyperactivity is going to stop, because they're causing it themselves.
You said something very interesting here. I have a child that has pretty bad ADHD, and because he lives with me, you know, I've been stuffing supplements and vitamins down his throat since he was able to swallow, and so he's to the point today where he won't take anything. But you said that you can actually, there's been some results actually putting this on the topically on the skin, and that it's working. Is that true?
Any cream, for example, on the skin goes right into the bloodstream. That's how we take our hormones, those wonderful replacement hormones.
So it's working.
That's
just
all.
It's working.
Just rubbed into the skin.
Orally? Is the topical evening primrose oil working just as good as taking it orally?
Oh, well, it is. It's recommended for babies, but I don't know. I mean, maybe they wouldn't like that. It's a real oily affair.
Well, I know my child would prefer it over having to swallow a pill.
Oh,
so I was so happy to see that. I had never heard that before, never even thought about it.
Yeah.
So could you talk to us about the role of amino acids? What are amino acids? Yeah. What do they do? What do they help? How do we use them?
Well, I mean, they're the building blocks of life. You wouldn't have life without the amino acids. So there's, I think it's 8 of them that are, like, essential to life and are able to make the others. Although we haven't even identified all of them. There's over 100 of them. So, you know, in the last century, we began for the first time in, I don't know, almost a million years, to know what chemicals created life in us. And we're still finding out. and they're sensational. They don't do just one thing like a drug does. They do, like, for instance, zinc does wonderful things in the brain, and in 70 other parts of the body, it does something else that's wonderful. So to be short of the real chemicals is much more dramatic. We just muddle through life not understanding what's wrong with us. But labs will tell us. Plus, if you read enough, you can almost match up what you're learning about a particular, say, zinc, what it does, and then what you're complaining about or what you need. And of course, it's found in food, but many people, and this is really the basis of orthomolecular medicine, that just to take a little isn't going to do it for most people. Many of us with a much higher dose come out of all kinds of problems that wouldn't make any difference, really, just to take the dab that the FDA says that we need. You know, even the agricultural list is for animals is higher than what they propose for humans. So they keep you barely alive, that's all.
So can you describe some different types of depression? Because there are several different types. And give people some idea, the symptoms of the different types, and an idea of how they can start researching to treat that specific type of depression. Does that make sense? You have
well,
some...
it does. It does. You know, let me see. There's depression, and then there's this manic depression thing, and they have different possibilities of what to do. But it's fairly clear what to do. When I went through the underlying causes that are the most common before, that pretty much covers what we look at. Now, for example, a pyroluric will be depressed because without zinc and B6, these two nutrients are the coenzymes that carry the GLA into the brain, make prostaglandin E1. So that rules out that a pyroluric is going to avoid depression unless it's treated. I mean, it that's a box of two things you get, depression and anxiety. The pyroluric being treated that will end her anxiety and also end the depression because the B6 and zinc, which is the reason for the pyroluria, the shortage in the brain, that will be supplied. And as soon as that's available, then that transition into the brain to create enough prostaglandin E1 will happen. So it's kind of funny how everything seems like it hangs on one more thing, and that's the way we're put together. It isn't like just one thing does one thing.
But I've been playing with B6, and I've found that P5. Works better for us. Does it matter which one you use?
No, B6 changes into P5P, and so we really do have the same thing. In fact, it's P5P has really come to the notice of drug companies, and I have read recently that I don't remember which big one it is, has petitioned the FDA. They would like to make P5P into a drug.
Really?
And they can't because it's a natural chemical. But that has not stopped drug companies in the past. So if it becomes a drug, it will get much more expensive.
Okay. So could we talk a little bit about why we need to do multivitamins and minerals when we are trying to treat something the importance of
well,
that?
You know, as when someone has been depressed for a long time, that isn't the circumstances of their life. When it doesn't go away, and it doesn't go away, that's biochemical. So trying to put your finger on, well, what's missing is a witch hunt, but you'd need to consider that the shortages of, for instance, with the essential fatty acids, if you never took any of them, if you never took primrose oil and you never took the omega-3 fish oil, then a very good chance that you could have really serious depression that would linger. But for people that have to know, well, do I have enough naturally? Say you ate fish all the time. Well, then you really would have enough omega-3. You can test those levels in you, you know, and then if indeed you have enough, then you know that that's not a cause.
So this hour came by. We've got about 15 minutes. I had no idea, but I want to ask you about stomach acid and the importance of that, and if it's more, is betaine or is hydrochloric acid the better choice? And then I want you to
They're together. I mean, the ones we use is betaine and hydrochloric acid. It's all in one capsule. And that is good for, you know, to take after a meal. That'll help the stomach break down. The stomach is a sea of acid, we hope. But if it isn't, and some people... It's true that they don't have enough acid in foods lie there and aren't utilized properly. If you'll take the kinds of things that will break it down, then you don't have to worry. And young people, I don't think, have to worry. But what we have seen is that we have people load hydrochloric acid one first with a meal, and then the next meal two, and then up to the point where they are getting some burning sensation. And it isn't, you know, terrible, but you can feel your stomach. It's kind of burning. And that's when you've got plenty of acid. You don't need any more hydrochloric acid. I can tell you that many of our clients get past 20 capsules before they feel anything. So, and here's the other odd thing. After that happens, it's almost, I call it resetting, because then it'll drop. After that, it will drop way down. It might be 4 or 5, and they'll stay at that for a while. And then finally, that may be a little high. But you have to take enough. Otherwise, it doesn't matter that you're taking it.
Okay. I interviewed this man the other day named Jonathan Wright. Who is Alan Gaby's
partner. He's a brilliant, brilliant doctor.
And he wrote a book, Why Stomach Acid is Important. And when I interviewed him, I was like, oh, my God, that makes so much sense, because so many people have reflux, and they think they have reflux because they have too much stomach acid, but as it turns out, most of them don't have enough. So they start taking those acid inhibitors, which causes this vicious cycle, and I don't think they realize if they don't have stomach acid, they're not going to get any of the nutrition from their food. They're just going to poop it out.
That's right.
So you've got about 10 minutes if you want to talk about anything that you want to talk about that we've not talked about, which is
a lot of... Well, I would say to anyone who is thinking that they need something for their mental state in the way of a psychiatric drug, psychoactive drug, to instead read about what may be causing it, because everything has an underlying cause. Now, when you go to a psychiatrist, they will match drugs to your symptoms. They don't test. They don't. That's one of the only parts of medicine that do no tests. But if you get on a drug, the drug isn't capable of, like, replacing a real chemical that God made. It simply fires it faster or takes a new route or something. But it depletes. It depletes the actual, for instance, a good example is people that take antidepressants because they don't have enough serotonin. That's supposed to be what this drug will do, all the antidepressants. Well, if you're firing serotonin in a way that is forcing more and more serotonin to come into activity, you're depleting what you had to begin with. And finally,
Don, can't hear her.
And the cerebral stores of it around the body and the spine and the cerebral parts of us are all depleted. And at that point, we know that people get either violent or suicidal. So it's a very dangerous game that you play when you start using odd ways to make your body put out something that it can't possibly have to spare. It's a very strange affair to do that. You know, in fact, there was something I found that I want to tell you about. Low serotonin levels, you know, this study that went on, it's in the Archives of General Psychiatry. 58 prisoners that had been convicted of manslaughter, the authors said they could predict who would kill again and who you better not release. And actually, they did with 85% accuracy. And you know how they did it? Those with low serotonin levels were the ones that would go haywire again, because it just... low serotonin levels trigger spontaneous violence. That study goes back to 1982, measuring that cerebrospinal fluid and how low it was in spontaneous killers, but not the premeditative types of murders, and then going on to discern who we dare let out and who we better not let out. And I thought that was brilliant. They should do that in every prison before they let go of some of these people. But you can see what's going to happen with somebody who's been on antidepressants a long time. They will deplete all their stores, and then I don't know which is worse to pick, suicide or violence.
Well, that
but you know what the answer is, and this goes back, I bring this up just because I have.
Hello, Don, I can't hear her. Don.
Can
Hello?
Make serotonin, and that will solve it. Remember earlier I said, I don't know, maybe you need to take a little of the drug. That's nonsense. Get the raw material to make serotonin, and take tryptophan throughout the day. It'll calm you down. And you can take it at night to sleep. I take tryptophan at night. I love it. Sleep
can
like a baby.
Can you take it during the day?
I don't, because I don't need to take it during the day. But you can. Yes, you can.
Are there any side effects?
A couple of 500 milligrams would be like 1 gram that you could take maybe twice a day, and then maybe at night you could take another, say, 3 or 4 grams. And
okay,
that would readily load back your serotonin. So now you're undoing what the psychiatric drug did to them.
Okay, that's really important to know.
Yeah, I knew you'd like that.
Yeah,
finally came to me. So,
So, and while we're talking about it, you talk in your book about the difference between tryptophan and 5-HTP and why you want to use tryptophan and not 5-HTP. You want to touch on that?
Well, you know, for a long time, tryptophan was taken off the market because Showa Denko in Japan, who makes almost all of the world's tryptophan, changed their manufacturing protocol and they did it to make money. However, what happened was people got ill. In fact, a few even died. And so the FDA pulled it off the market. And the New England Journal of Medicine published a couple of years later the exact thing that had happened and said it had now been remedied and there's nothing wrong with tryptophan. But, of course, they kept it off the market because people were now into Prozac and the drug companies were peddling their wares. But even though you couldn't get tryptophan, you could get 5-HTP. And so people bought that. In Europe, they were using it, but with a drug that would direct it into the brain. If you don't direct it into the brain, there's no way to know where it goes. And finally, there was a class action suit. You might remember FenFen. Well, the FEN part of it was the tryptophan, but it wasn't tryptophan. It was the 5-HTP that harmed the heart. And so there were lawsuits. I figured, why do that? In fact, it was written up to in one of the journals about how it was a danger. And so I figured it's you can absolutely guarantee that tryptophan will go into the brain if you take it with a little bit of fruit juice, which then makes enough of, what do you call it, high carbohydrate to take it into the brain. And there's no problem about getting it into the brain and not into other parts of your body. So it's just wiser to do that.
Okay. You got 5 minutes. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
5 minutes. Well,
you might want to talk about the Alliance.
Yeah, I could. You know, when I talked out in California a few years ago, after that conference, a lot of us got together and bemoaned the fact that there were so few that were understanding the chemistry of behavior and wanting to talk about that kind of biochemical repair. And so we started, we formed, it was just, I don't know how many of us, maybe 20 of us, got started that day, and we have since then tried to spread it as much as we can. And I think there's many, many people that are in it because they actually do some of these things, and then there's some that want to learn badly. They just don't have any place to go to learn what to do. So it's certainly, the Alliance has many teachers in it, and it's a worthy thing to connect to. Do you have a number for them?
I don't, but it's to let people know, we're talking about the Alliance for Addiction Solutions. It's a nonprofit organization, and I think it's AllianceForAddictionSolutions.org. And
right.
You do not have to be a practitioner to join. Anybody can join. We have monthly teleconferences where we get somebody from around the world that specializes in mood disorders and addiction or addictions. And we help educate mostly practitioners, but people as well, how to treat addiction and mood disorders holistically. So there is hope for you. There are resources for you.
Right.
That's available.
Right.
So,
go
ahead.
I was going to say that we can, for people who wonder who in their area might be the kind of doctor that would do this, we can contact the Orthomolecular Society, and they are in Toronto. Hold on, I'll get that number in just two seconds here. Because they keep a list of everyone. Actually, there are orthomolecular physicians throughout the world and practitioners. Like our place is. And let's see. Yeah, here it is. It's 416-733-2117. And ask them, you know, who in your state could they contact that would be doing orthomolecular medicine.
Well, that's a helpful resource. Okay, tell us one more time where we can find you.
All right. Well, you can find us in Minneapolis, and the obvious place to go first is on our website, which is healthrecovery.com. All one word, healthrecovery.com. Or you can call us. It's 800-554-9155. Or you can, the books, my books are still out there. That first one, which is on alcoholism, 7 Weeks to Sobriety, was a national bestseller, and it's still selling. And that one is older than the last one. So, but the reason, I think, is because it's been a slow change for the field to try anything new. And now orthomolecular medicine is so far ahead of traditional medicine when it comes to mental illness. I want to tell anyone listening, if you have or know of someone or maybe yourself suffering from schizophrenia or the schizophrenias, because it isn't all one thing. It needs to be tested to see what underlying cause is your problem. And if you haven't been on psychiatric drugs for years, if you're younger than, say, 35, there's a very good chance that you can recover. It's only when you've monkeyed around with psychiatric drugs a long time that it becomes very difficult, because it's left alone. In fact, if you look at other countries, third world countries, where they don't get to have many drugs, people who are schizophrenic come out the other end years later at a much higher rate. There's hardly any revival kind of thing from schizophrenia once you've been on those drugs. You won't bother anybody, but you won't have a life either. So I strongly recommend tell people that you know that are schizophrenic that there is help out there.
Why is there a poor recovery rate for people who have been on drugs a long time?
Oh, my God, you don't know? The antipsychotic drugs work on the frontal lobe where we do our thinking, and they shrink the frontal lobe year after year. At first, they wouldn't admit that was happening. Now, absolutely, we know that is what's happening, and so they're destroying the brain where we do our thinking.
Wow.
In fact, you can take any psychoactive drugs, and by reading about what they do, the dark side would head out in the direction of what is possible to repair without destroying as you go. It's really, I'm trying to think of the name of the book. That there's a new book out. I don't have it, but it's very good. It tells a lot of the studies from the journals of what drugs really do. They do some good, but they do some terrible things too, and those things aren't reversible.
If I want to find it, what would I Google, since we don't know the name?
Well, let me think here. Well, if you don't know the name, how can you Google it? I mean, You're asking an impossible question.
No, it's possible. But I have a few keywords. But not to worry. If you think about it, email me, and I'll put it on my Facebook.
I will. It's, you know, it's a crazy thing that I can't think of. It's the author is a medical writer named Robert Whitaker. W-H-I-T Whitaker. I think it's A-K-E-R.
Well, thank you, Dr. Larson, for coming on, and I appreciate everything that you've done. Oh, well, here it is, Anatomy of an Epidemic. Okay, Dr. Larson, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully you will agree to come back on soon. Good night, and have a good evening.